everybody, podcast world. I am currently, this is Roberta Grant, and it is December 27th, 2022, and I'm currently in White Salmon, Washington, which is an hour east of Portland, Oregon. It's where I live, in my house. It's super snowy out there, and now it's raining. Yeah, so we were going to go skiing. I was going to go skiing with my husband and son, 13-year-old, but it's all slushy up there. So tomorrow, hopefully, it will be a better Rage in the Pow day. Rage in the Powder. Yeah, so it's nice to not work for the last 2 weeks. I do therapy for a living. It's my job. You know, I've given up on trying to make these podcasts perfect. I'm just going to do them and see what happens. And just hear myself, mental masturbation, talk to myself, and all that. and a lot of and other noises. But who gives a crap, right? Anyway. Yeah, so I've got lots of stuff I figured out about myself through COVID and through my own self-care. And just the last few years, not just COVID, but just about what it means to be a semi-functional person. So I read The Daily Stoic every day. It's Stoicism, a book by Ryan Holiday. Today, the quote is, "Don't let your soul go first. It's a disgrace in this life when the soul surrenders first, while the body refuses to." Marcus Aurelius. And talks about Marcus Aurelius just kept going, pushing through his struggles. He never gave up. His body was so run down, they thought he was dead, but he never did. His soul stayed strong even after his body became weak. He did not give up right up to the second until it did. And then he could have backed out of his responsibilities. He could have said, fuck it, thrown his hands up and been like, I'm done. I'm not into this. Apparently he was like this super prominent. Marcus Aurelius was a super prominent Roman emperor who was also a general too. So at the height of the Roman Empire, and he had a lot going on. And there was a lot going on, and that's where Stoicism has come from, some of his writings. But he just kept pushing through, and this was an upheld value in the Stoic world. Don't let your soul go first. I'm guessing what their meaning is, like, don't tough it out like a martyr till your body just decays and dies. But I think it just means, you know, even when life gets hard and tough and difficult and uncomfortable, don't just drop the ball and back out of your responsibilities and commitments and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, all of this, 'cause Stoicism a lot is about not giving in to your own natural inclinations first, you know, not giving into your weaknesses, but also not expecting things to be perfect and dealing with what's there. Anyway, I'm not going to go on about me. I'm not a Stoic expert, but read that quote. That's what it said. December 27th. Sorry. Don't let your soul go first. That whole question of soul and body being unified, super important, right? I mean, in my job as a therapist, like, it's pretty common for people to have battles in their soul and body and mind and between all three in different various ways. And yeah, and sometimes I feel like I'm a teacher of helping others to find their way through that. And I've been reading two books about that kind of thing lately. One book written by Richard Schwartz, PhD, called No Bad Parts. He started a theory, the internal family systems model. Super interesting. You can Google it. And this book he wrote, it talks about the typical things about internal family systems, but the more interesting things and how we've internalized as a culture our bad parts, the shame and the judgment and of our, you know, quote, patriarchal, white supremacist, and colonized mindset, capitalism and all that. Everybody knows what all that is. And we actually have psychological parts that have internalized inside of us that battle between that battle with us in our own minds and shame us and tell us we're bad and all this stuff. And so that's interesting to actually add a, I would say, social justice perspective to the parts idea. It's interesting and it makes sense. Sounds like social justice is entering that world too. And he comes from a Jewish background, I think. And the next book I've been reading is Gabor Mate, who's also from a Jewish background, and he even shares his story as a Hungarian Jew. His family was, I don't remember the story exactly, but definitely Nazi occupation, separated from his mother at some point, threat of being put in a camp, and through that fear and threat, they were able to get out and escape, but that threat contributed to his trauma of being separated from his mother, and has quite a story around that. And he became a doctor in Canada and practiced as a practitioner of healing, family practitioner for like, I don't know, a dozen years, and then got into doing more mental health work with people in Vancouver, drug addiction. He's got books on that. His name is Gabor Mate, and he finally wrote a book called The Myth of Normal, also saying a similar thing as Richard Swartz, that what we think is normal is not normal in our sick, toxic culture of dominance and just stuff that was told to us. And he's got a whole bunch of chapters on it. It's kind of a follow-up, I think, to In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts, which was his other book about addiction and how addiction is connected to childhood trauma and how trauma is not just mental health issues and disorders. A lot of those are not genetic as much as they are circumstantial. And when humans are raised in this toxic, sick culture, we get patterns of dysfunction that get labeled as genetic or disorders, when actually it's just more of a circumstance of the system and how fucked up the system is. And once again, that is a social justice perspective also shared with the internal family system's father, Richard Schwartz. Anyway, and both, I don't know much about Richard Schwartz's background, but I think he's a Jewish man, and I know Gabor Mate is, and so both of them come from an oppressed, possible oppressed group. Richard Schwartz, I don't know, but definitely Gabor Mate, and so probably speaks from his own experience as well about that. And, you know, interesting thing is Sigmund Freud, too, also comes from a Jewish background. So, you know, it's about time that we have people, especially men, it's very nice, saying these things in what's wrong with our culture. And, you know, I do think that this is why the culture's struggling, falling apart, whatever you want to call it, shifting. Lots of people are bringing attention to these issues. It's all over, even in our cinema. And the other thing, piggybacking on that, the two things that are in the news, we've been in a tech boom for the last, I don't know, 10 years. What do I know? I'm not much of a tech person, but FTX, cryptocurrency, that company connected to cryptocurrency, which I don't know the whole story, but the guy who ran that was connected to all the crypto businesses and cryptocurrency, what do you call them, engines or something, but that's a big scandal. And it turns out that that industry that was supposed to save us, quote, pooped itself, and now we're changing its diaper. Surprise, surprise, another boom bust cycle in the American story. How do we not, like, see these things? And people, you know, it's greed. It's greed once again. And even the tech world has plenty of greed. I mean, social media has been attacked from so many different angles. I mean, none of these tech brought that much positivity to our lives as much as it's brought negativity. I don't know. But supposedly there's also a recession next year, and related to the tech layoffs, because there's been thousands of those apparently, are going to be. who knows? I'm not an economist, but that's what's also in the news alongside this FTX scandal. And then the other thing is cobalt mining in the Congo has also been brought to attention as being pretty much super disgusting, horrible social justice issue. I mean, there's denial from all the tech companies that get their Microsoft, Apple, Google, all these ones. They get the technology from cobalt. They're microchips, I think, microprocessors. Cobalt is a metal that's used in those. And China owns the cobalt mines in Africa and the Congo now. And so there's nothing any American company can do because they're China-owned. But a reporter named Siddhartha Kara went into the Congo and got some footage of the lifestyles and what's going on over there and how rugged and rustic the mining is and how unsafe it is for the people there and all this stuff. And it's all over the internet now. It's going viral. Anyway, and all the tech companies will be under fire for what are they going to do about this. And the EV battery companies as well. So, super interesting that all of a sudden tech is not looking so great. And has it been looking great this whole time? Or is it that it's been long enough that we've waited out the corruption, which eventually is starting to show itself? I don't know. But, you know, it's not a shock to me that at some point this kind of thing was gonna happen. One of these things was gonna collapse or fall or cause problems, or because if you live long enough in this country and you know a little bit about history and American history, is you can track the boom bust cycles of the country. And it's always amazing to me how, you know, there's a hope of something coming to fix something else and leave a disaster, and it only lasts for so long until it leaves a disaster in its wake. So, for instance, the Ohio River Valley and the Rust Belt and all the metal working that went on down there for building cars and the, I don't even know, what was that, the 50s, 40s, 20s, 30s of how jobs were created and all this stuff was happening for people in that area. Prosperity came and all the working class unions grew and, like, communities were growing and neighborhoods were growing, and then something made that industry collapse. And now those same areas that were super prosperous like 50 years ago are now riddled with pill mills and opioid crisis and stuff like that. So anyway, not to get too dark, I'm originally from the East Coast, Atlanta in particular, so I now live on the West Coast, and I think the West Coast is learning about these boom bust cycles because they're not new to the East Coast. So, welcome. The other cycles out in the West are probably logging and possibly mining. So, boom bust cycle that was a thing and now it's not, and now all the people who depended on that are now left poor and in the wake of the destruction of that. And the ones who became successful got out. So, I don't know. You know, this is how it works. Maybe I'm just jaded. Because I feel in my job that I'm a little obligated to see outside of the therapy room and see what else is going on in this person's life. What has gone on in their parents' life. How did they get here? And all sorts of things. And it makes me curious about history and what happens to groups of people. And I really appreciate these guys, Richard Schwartz and Gabor Mate and others like them, of bringing up trauma and collective trauma and, you know, the Native American story, the African American story. Those are two groups in the U.S. that are well known to have stuff like that. And there's lots of stories. So I think, you know, it's important to remember that stuff, historical trauma. So, yeah, 14 minutes in. So keeping all that in mind, I really try to entertain myself. So I'm not down deep in the gallows of my own sadness and nihilism. So we are beginning a new century. We've been one. So it's really fucking time that we dump the social Darwinism, the Thomas Hobbes, the John Locke, and all the dark shit that we think, and the original sin, that humans are bad, selfish, and we all come from a selfish place, and that's how we operate, and dog eat dog, and no, humans have the capacity for both competition and cooperation, and they just told us that to create scarcity, to control people, and we had to put somebody in the bottom, you know. So, and somebody's got to be on the top. Bunch of bullshit. Don't agree with it. Anyway, new century, new way of being. I've been getting into comedy lately. That's been fun. Comedy open mic. There's been one in town at the Hood River Elks. It's the Elk Club. Pretty old building. Got some history. In Hood River. Pretty fun. Looks like a dungeon or a swingers club too. So that's possibilities. I don't know. Not my thing, but love doing comedy. It's really fun. And I'm also a musician now in a Spoob. It's the name of the band. No, it's not a substance. It's a name. It's not a fluid. So, and I've been skiing a lot. So that's my therapy. Comedy, spoobin', and skiing. And just gotta keep those things up, because I don't have time for depressing shit. So I recommend that you all do that stuff and have fun, because, you know, the world's way too fucking serious. And I also recommend, yoni steamings. His, her yoni steaming and ball steaming for free. You can buy your own set, because they're really expensive. So, get yourself a yoni steaming. And see if they'll steam your husband's balls, too. So, he might like it. I swear. It's good for your pelvic floor. I still haven't done that yet, but I decided I'm going to start a business called Slop Your Dripper. And I'm going to sell his, her sets. And where you can sit back to back with each other and bond. And get your pelvic floor steamed. So, welcome. And then, yeah, I don't know why people do those or think they're like, it's sacred. And if there's also women's, I don't know if I should keep going on about this, but exploring your genitalia, sacred classes. And that's really funny because you can do that in a group. It's not funny, but I couldn't do that. These are just new therapies and trends that have popped up in the whole yoga, like self-help in new age world, the sacred yoni. Sit in a room, explore your genitalia, be guided by somebody in the group, and then it's in a group. I don't know if I could do that. I don't think I could do that in a group. And I asked my husband if he would be interested in doing that, and he said, honey, that's called a circle jerk when guys do that together. So, oh, okay, just on a biscuit, circle jerk. Awesome. And I talked to my guy friends, and they're like, I've been exploring my genitalia since I was little. Like, I don't know what you ladies' deal is, but, you know, I don't need somebody to teach me how to do that. So, I don't know, maybe it's great for the sacred yoni, whatever. So, yeah, comedy, it's healthy. Don't take yourself too serious. So, a theme I've noticed with let's talk about boundaries maybe. So if you got boundary problems with people, and you just keep having the same boundary problems, it's probably time to say something about it to the people in your life. Like, hey, you keep crossing this boundary, and don't say it in a mean way, or you're going to yell at them, because you might want to get your anger out, but that's childish. So maybe do it in a way that's like an adult, and be like, hey, you know, I got to talk to you about something. And if they don't receive the mature comment, then just lay it out there and just start throwing poop at them, because that's what they deserve. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, you know, just don't, if you got to communicate boundary issues with somebody, there's, sometimes you feel like raging at someone, and it depends on how bad the situation is or has been. Like, if it's been a parent-child and your parent was a really shitty abuser, yeah, sometimes it's warranted to drop off a doggy bag full of poop on their front porch and lighten it on fire, if they're that kind of shitty parent. But, you know, if it's friends or, like, family that kind of did a small offense or is continually annoying you, you know, put on your adult pants on and say, hey, I would appreciate if you treated me less like that, blah, blah, blah. And if they're a good person, they'll be like, okay, well, what do you mean? What do you mean? Blah, blah, blah. Little defensive, but willing to listen. Give them a chance. And, you know, these are all tests. And setting boundaries with people is a test. Everything is an experiment in life. There's not one right way to do stuff. And I think sometimes that people get emotional and they forget that when you have an emotional conflict or confrontation you have to have with someone, you have to prepare like a general or a strategist. You don't just go in there fist flying, you did this to me and you did that. And like, that doesn't, I mean, if you're 2, yeah, sure. But if you're like 20 something, it's, nobody's going to take you serious. So if you really want to be taken serious, get educated, prepare, go in there like a general, fight your battle well with self-control, say your piece, and if they don't deliver, you are not obligated to have to keep that relationship in your life, period. Nobody tells you you have to. And it depends on the relationship, of course. If it's a friend, whatever. Depends on how close they are. If they're a parent, it's a little tougher, but doesn't matter. Figure out what is important, what they're capable of, and just share your thoughts. Because, you know what? We live in a world where not everybody's going to agree on stuff. Not everybody's going to have the same perspective. We're not all the same. So learning to be an adult is learning to live in a world like that. And if you think things are going to go your way all the time because you throw a fit, not going to work. So, sorry to sound a little preachy. I'll pull a stick out of my ass, but sorry, I got to sip my wine and self-medication for 3 o'clock today, speaking of being an adult. But, you know, there's mature ways of keeping your own self-respect and dignity, and also the self-respect of the other person, and communicating stuff. So, and it's a skill set. I think what happens is, you know, I don't even know what's happened, but it seems like, you know, with technology, or we don't get a lot of face-to-face practice with conflict. And we don't, like we used to. And so people are just coming out of their, off of their screens, fist flying out of the COVID world, right? Which was like a year and a half ago at this point. Just yelling and screaming at each other. And, you know, I would think it's 2022. A lot of that has been worked out. And people have either cut off relationships or changed boundaries with people in their lives, or some mixture in between. I don't know. But I do feel part of my work is helping people sort through their boundaries and figuring out, you know, what's important to them. And you get to choose who you want in your life. Nobody else has to choose that. And if you're in a circumstance where you can't choose it or it's difficult, then that, you know, that's different. Some of us are trapped in relationships or marriages. But for the most part, most people do get to choose. So you have to hope that you can have the courage and the self-empowerment and the self-compassion and compassion for the other person that you can make those changes. And yeah. Another thing I did that was really fun in therapy is called the big feelings game. This one young person under the age of 9, probably a 6-year-old, I'll just say, had big feelings, and parents going through a big change, divorce and stuff, and like had a really hard time containing their emotions. And so we would play the big feelings game, and I didn't make it up, but I kind of did. And I'd lay on the floor and kick my feet and be like, "No, I want things this way." And they would watch me and be like, "Oh my gosh, like, seeing me in pain and acting that way." And I think that a young child, when they're able to witness that, they're like, "Wow, that's how I feel." You know, or however I'm acting, whatever, you know, or sometimes they act it out. It doesn't matter. But the acting part is crucial and important and helpful, because often when you're just talking about it, it doesn't mean shit. So it's nice to like get in your body, get on the floor and kick your feet in the air. And or just to curl up in a ball in a fetal position and cry. And wow, that really hurts. I'm hurting. I wish somebody would take care of me, kind of thing. And young children, when they see that, they're like, "Oh, wow, that's someone else can feel that way too." And realize that they're not alone, that other people also experience that. And for themselves, that they deserve love and attention and support from others when those feelings get to be expressed or validated. It's not, it's what you do with those feelings is what's harmful. Kicking people or throwing things at them or, you know, being destructive to somebody else. But having the feelings, there's no shame in that. We're human. And God's sakes, people, we need to teach our children it's okay to have a vulnerable emotion of sadness or rage or whatever, especially if they're going through something hard. And sometimes those emotions come out at school, or sometimes they come out at a sibling, or sometimes they come out at the other parent. And most likely, if they're coming out at the parent, that's because they feel safer with that parent. It's unfortunate, but the parent that seems to take the brunt of a lot of the emotion sometimes is the one parent they actually have better attachment with. Okay, more secure attachment is a better word, or closer. I don't know the right, but that could be the case. So it's another thing, if you're experiencing someone you know going through a really hard thing, and the child, like if you're experiencing an adult friend and you're seeing the child being affected by the adults in the household, you know, these are things that might be helpful. Helping with the big feelings game. What big feelings are you feeling today? You know, and giving them space for that. Because children will not, they don't always speak up when they're going through stuff. And then the parents are like, "Oh God, I gotta get this kid in therapy. I think they're like, there's something wrong with them." When it's the parent, actually, most of the time, that actually also needs a therapy, and they put it on the kid, and there's something wrong with the kid, and blah, blah, blah. But the kid's nervous system, depending on the age of the kid, is super tied in to the adult's nervous system. So whatever's going on with the adult, duh, is going to go on with the child too. So all depends on the age. When they become teenagers, they start to splinter off and not need so much the other adult's nervous system. But Anyway, this isn't rocket science. It's systems thinking and being able to see the whole system as itself and being able to step out of our own feelings that we get bogged down by. So, right. This has been all over the place podcast. I just wanted to say a bunch of shit. And sorry, I was cussing. Maybe I'll be more appropriate in the future with interviews. I don't know. They say you shouldn't just have one and talk to yourself. So there's cussing in this and there's gallows dirty humor. So sorry. And just letting you know, just because I have strong comments about things like, hey, duh, it's the kid, does not mean I'm judging the parents, or it does not mean I'm judging my clients at all. It's mostly just because that is sometimes when we can easily live in ignorance as adults, even myself with my own child, of, hey, of course I forget to look outside of myself at what's going on. And, you know, so anyway, and it's humbling. It's humbling to be, hey, it's not just about me and my emotions and my feelings. We live in a really selfish society. And I'm always amazed at, like, the lack of thought sometimes that's put in, and compassion, not just thought, but compassion that people have less and less for each other. And it's like, have some compassion, maybe. I don't know. Might be a good idea. Okay. Enough preaching. Signing off. Thank you. Happy New Year.